today in the Bhagavatam. Last week I had to leave early, but we were having a kind of a just a meeting, an organizational meeting. Did you ever actually read a verse? And no. Okay, so then we're doing text 30 today. Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atha Avishat Swabhavanam. Atha Avishat Swabhavanam. Sarva Kamam Anuttamam. Sarva Kamam Anuttamam. Prasada Yatra Patninam. Prasada Yatra Patninam. Sahasrani Chasodasha. Sahasrani Chasodasha. Atavishat Svabhavanam. Sarvakamam Manutamam. Prasada Yatra Patninam. Sahasrani Chasodasha. Atavishat Svabhavanam. Sarvakamam Anuttamam. Prasada Yatra Patninam. Sahasrani Chasodasha.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Sarvakamam manuttamam.
Sarvakamam manuttamam.
Prasada yatra patninam.
Prasada yatra patninam.
Sahasrani cha shodasha.
Sahasrani cha shodasha.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Sarvakamam anuttamam.
Sarvakamam anuttamam.
Prasada yatra patninam.
Prasada yatra patninam.
Sahasrani cha shodasha.
Sahasrani cha shodasha.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Atavishatsva bhavanam.
Sarvakamam anuttamam.
Sarvakamam anuttamam.
Prasada yatra patinanam.
Prasada yatra patninam.
Sahasres cha shodasha.
Sahasrani cha shodasha. Atha. Thereafter. Avishat. Entered. Swabhavanam. Personal palaces. Sarva. All. Kamam. Desires. Anuttamam, perfect to the fullest extent. Prasadaha, palaces. Yatra, where? Patninam, of the wives numbering. Sahasrani, thousands. Cha, over and above. Shodasha, 16. Translation. Thereafter the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Please repeat. Thereafter the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives. And for each and every one of them, there was a fully equipped palace, complete with necessary compounds and gardens. Full description of these palaces is given in the 10th canto. All the palaces were made of the best marble stone. They were illuminated by jewels and decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. The personality of Godhead means one who is full with all power, all energy, all opulences, all beauties, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Therefore, in the palaces of the Lord, there was nothing wanting for the fulfilling all desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited, and the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as sarvakamam, or full with all desirable equipment. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavansha. By the way, we have the in the second yellow tab in here now, we have all the and we've added some new mantras. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Shri Shri Navadvipa Parapradipa Dipyamana Satato Bhuviha Chaitastamo Hanti Yasya Yatnat Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Prajoditak Shri Vyasad Yashkoshan Kushalang Kripalahu Sarmlacha Bhag Desha Chaye Dadad Yas Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Achadyate Yat Paratarka Drishya Govinda Murt Yujvala Paskarena Advaiti Kaitotat Kulang Jagatyang Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Yasyaiva Yatnena Purana Raja Ganga Mala Keshava Keli Hangsa Sat Stotra Ratna Vahati Haloke Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Shri Radhika Krishna Padaravinde Sahasra Hritsu Satamandireshu Aropayadyo Madhure Prativyang Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Kaushalya Dairyasya Sahasra Shastra Shastrati Varshay Pratihanyatehi Chanda Kaler Mohachamur Hatena Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Nana Lasad Gaura Shudha Prakasha Palakshitaut Stapita Eva Yena Krishna Nuchinta Jana Sangha Vrikshas Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam Yo Nityada Jivati Daivakishu Nijasu Shikashu Tusangami Kripam Budhir Nanda Sutashritatma Tankirtayama Prabhupada Devam. This is a new edition. It's composed by Kushakrata and versified by Dravida. So we'll do the English after. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Ti Namine Madhuryojvala Premadhyā Shri Rupanuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambhara Sampode Padam Bhujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gauravir bhava bhumes tvang nirdeshta sajjana priyaha vaishnava sarva bhoma shri jagannathaya te namaha vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha namo maha vadanyaya krishna prema pradayate krishnaya krishna chaitanya namne gaura tvishe namaha pancha tattvatmakam krishnang bhakta rupa swarupakam bhaktavataram bhaktakyam namami bhakta shaktikam he krishna karuna sindho dinabandho jagatpate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute jayatang suratau pangor mama mandamater gati matsarvasvapadam bhojao radha madana mohanao divyad vrindaranya kalpadrumadha srimad ratna gara singhasanastau srimad radha srila govinda devau prishtali bhik sevyamanao smarami sriman rasarasarambhi vangshi vatatatakstitaha karshan venu svanayar gopir gopinatak shriyestu naha taptakanchana gaurangi radhe vrindavaneshwari vrishabhanu sute devi pranamami hari priye vrindayai tulsi devyai priyaye keshavashcha vishnu bhakti prade devi satyabhatyai namo namaha shri nishringha jaya nishringha jaya jaya nishringha prahladesha jaya padma mukha padma bringa matsamo nasti papatma na paradhi chakashchana parihare pilajame king bruve purushottama yuvatinang yata yuni yunang cha yuvatau yata manobhi ramate tadpan manome ramatang twayi bhumaus kalita padanang bhumire vavalambanam twayi jata paradhanam tvam eva sharanang prabho Govinda Vallabhe Radhe Prarthaye Tvang Ahang Sada Tvadiyam Iti Janatu Govindo Mang Tvayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadhishe Karunamrita Vahini Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyang Mahyam Pradiyatam Vande Nanda Vrajastrinang Padarenum Abhikshnashaha Yasang Harikatod Gitang Punati bhuvanatrayam nama shreshtam manum api shachi putra matra swarupam shri rupam tasya grajamuru purim maturim goshtavatim radha kundam karyavaram ahoradhika madhavasam prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurung tang natosmi adadanas trinang dantir idang yache punak punaha Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Rajohang Syam Pave Pave Hantaya Madri Rabala Haridasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Charanas Parashat Pramodaha Manang Tanoti Sahago Ganayos Tayoryat Paniya Suya Vasa Kandara Kanda Mulahi Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare 8 verses glorifying Srila Prabhupada. Before we start the Bhagavatam class, let's read the English. Let us continuously glorify, I'll just read it out loud then. Let us continuously glorify His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, by whose efforts the hearts of all living entities which were pervaded by darkness are becoming illumined with the brilliant and everlasting lamp of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose eternal abode is the holy Dhamma of Navadvip. Taking the order of His spiritual master Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as His life, He showed His causeless mercy on the lowest born creatures, the inhabitants of the western countries, by translating, publishing, and distributing the auspicious treasure house of devotional literatures written by Srila Vyasadeva, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj, and others. Let us therefore continuously glorify Srila Prabhupada. The last snare of nescience had been set in place by the Mayavadi gurus and swamis, who appeared like so many glowworms. When, however, the brilliant sun of Lord Govinda's transcendental form began to illuminate the world, having been established through the expert logic of Srila Prabhupada As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the glowworms were naturally eclipsed. Let us therefore continuously offer praise and adoration to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Let us glorify His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Because of His efforts, the pure and crystal clear Ganges River of Srimad Bhagavatam, the King of the Puranas, is now flowing all over the world. The pebbles in that river are the jewels, which are the prayers of the pure devotees, and playing within its waters are the swans, which are the pastimes of Lord Keshava. Let us glorify His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who planted the charming lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in hundreds of temples and thousands of hearts in this world. Seeing the fierce army of illusions put forward by the forces of Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada has released an unlimited shower of powerful arrows in the form of His books. In this way, truth is emerging as the victor. Let us therefore double and redouble our glorification of Srila Prabhupada. Let us glorify His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the desire tree of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, whose many splendid fruits are different methods of distributing Lord Chaitanya's nectarian message, has been planted upon Him, by Him upon this earth. Let us forever glorify Srila Prabhupada, the unlimited ocean of mercy. With His body, mind, words, and self, He has taken complete shelter of the son of Nanda Maharaj, Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada lives forever by His divine instructions, and His followers live with Him. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, thereafter the Lord entered His palaces, which were perfected to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. The description is mentioned here, that there's a description given in the 10th canto. There are actually several different descriptions of Dwarka in the 10th canto. But I think he's mentioning the time when Narada Muni came to visit Krishna in Dwarka and see his daily activities and see what he was doing in all his palaces. Even before that, when Rukmini was having some talks with Krishna, there's some description also about how wonderfully Dwarka was laid out and how beautiful the palaces were. The whole city was laid out by architect Vishvakarma, the architect of the demigods. And actually there were over 900,000 palaces in there. Not 900,000 buildings. Some of them were residential palaces and some of them were like assembly house palaces and some of them were temples. But they were all beautifully adorned, like this is describing. They were made of the best marble and they had pillars and floors made of precious jewels and encrusted with precious jewels, including Chintamani jewels. And the furniture was all made of ivory with gold and diamonds in it. And all of the streets and crossroads were very, very nicely decorated. The gates were made out of silver. The gates and all the doors of were all made out of silver. You might see if you go to Florence, you see the big bronze doors and stuff, but here they have big. So actually there are some silver doors you can see in the Renaissance cities in Europe and stuff, probably in India too. You can see nice, beautiful doors. So in Dwarka, there's all these 900,000 palaces with beautiful carved doors all made out of silver. And gold and jewelry is everywhere, and it's catching the light. So they have lamps that you light the lamp inside, and then the jewelry diffuses all the light brilliantly. And then other jewelry reflects the light, and of course, there's no need for fire to illuminate things there because everything is self-luminous. So anyway, Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, people find that amazing that he had 16,000 wives, but if you really understand who Krishna is as the absolute truth, you'll think, why not 16 million wives? You know, every living entity in every universe, not just in this universe, but imagine how many living entities, from germs to demigods and, you know, entities on the subtle platform we don't even know about. Krishna comes with all of them in each of their hearts. And He's capable of everything. In fact, everything is coming from Him. The splendor of the sun and the light of the moon is coming from Him. Aditya, in the 15th chapter, not Gama Vishichaputani, that's that one there. He's holding all the things in their orbit. Soma Bhutva Rasatmakam, he's becoming the moon. But that's not the one I'm thinking of. Is Yach Chandramasi Yach Chagno Tattejo Vitimamakam. I am the splendor of the sun that lights up the universe. Jagat Bhasyate Akilam. Aditya Gatang Tejo. All right, we have the 15th chapter. I hope it's in this verse book. Gatang Tejo Jagat Bhasyate Akilam Yach Chandramasi Yach. Yad Aditya Gatang Tejo is how it goes. It would be verse like. No, it's not here. It's probably verse 12 or something like that. Yad aditya gatang tejo jagad bhasyate kilam yach chandramasi yach chagno tejo vitimamakam. So the splendor of the sun that lights up the whole universe and that of the moon also and that of fire, it's really my splendor, my light, you know, Krishna is saying. So, one time when Narada Muni came there to see Krishna, there was the beautiful latticework windows in the palaces, had little holes in them that let in the moonlight. Everything was very beautiful, and there were canopies made of finest silk and encrusted with pearls, lots of strings of pearls all through the canopies throughout the palaces. And there was so much incense burning, incense and fragrant gums were burning, and it was making these big clouds that were coming out of the windows. And the peacocks were confused, and they thought that these were rain clouds, and so they started to dance jubilantly. And there were orchards, as described here. Each palace was complete with necessary compounds and gardens. So the palaces, each of the palaces, there's so many palaces, but they all had their own compounds and surroundings with fruit trees, with varieties of fruits, and gardens with beautiful, fragrant flowers, including the Parijata flower that was, in the heavenly plant from the heavenly planets. Krishna brought the Parijata trees and planted them for Satyabhama. Rukmini had gotten a flower, so Satyabhama was jealous. So Krishna took her with him when he went, and he conquered Banasura and married the other 16,000 wives. He took Satyabhama with him on the back of Garuda, and then they took the Parijata, the whole tree from heaven, and they planted the Parijata trees in Dwarka. So all these very fragrant flowers were smelling there, and you can just imagine how splendid the city of Dwarka is. And we'll see it someday with our with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. Haribol, the splendor of this wonderful transcendental city of Dwarka. And there were swans on the lakes and cranes. And, of course, there were red lotuses and blue lotuses and different kinds of lilies. And so this is not astonishing. We were talking about it before. In fact, it's what we were talking about with the Brahma Samhita. It was right here. Sarvakamam, full with all desirable equipment. Sarvakamam, anuttamam. The palaces are perfect to the fullest extent. And Srila Prabhupada is expressing that this is how you can understand the Absolute Truth, that this Supreme Absolute Truth should be full of everything and not lacking in anything. And anything he desires is immediately fulfilled. And he has unlimited desires. It's not that if we have many desires, just imagine how many desires he can have that can be fulfilled. So this is the absolute truth. In the beginning, the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says that the concept of the absolute truth is different from the conception of God. The conception of God and the conception of the absolute truth are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. The conception of God indicates the controller, whereas the conception of the absolute truth indicates the summum bonum, or the ultimate source of all energies. So there can be many Ishwaras, you know. You can have the big boss of your corporation, or the big boss of some country, or, you know, all kinds of big controllers of things, big organizations and things, and planets, and demigods. They're big controllers. And so they're gods in the sense that they're, you know, controllers and powerful persons. But the absolute truth can only be one. The absolute truth has to be full of everything. It can't be lacking anything, can't have any rival. Right? One without a second. So this is, they're wrong who say that the Vedic culture is not monotheistic. You know, the Hebrew, the Abrahamic traditions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they're very proud that, you know, before us, you know, before the Jews started monotheistic religion, religion was all this, you know, like totems. You know, you have your God and I have my God, and there are many gods and they're all competing, and there's a God of this and a God of that, and we all, you know, are the, you know, the followers of one God, and he'll defeat the other gods and stuff like that. But really, the God of the Jews, you know, Yahweh, is like a monotheistic God. But actually, I see it quite the opposite. It's, to me, it seems like most of them, in their religions, they still have this sense that we're the chosen people of God, and God is going to help us defeat our enemies. And it's almost as if, you know, he's the real God, and the other people have other gods, but they're not the real God or something. And, you know, the good God against the bad God or something. It's still not a very developed universal conception. I'm not saying that there aren't Christian and Jewish and Muslim theologians who have a very developed universal conception. But the Srimad Bhagavatam develops this conception of the absolute truth, who's one without a second and who's full of everything, in a much more sophisticated and complete and detailed way. And then, you know, here's the exposition. It's Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, who comes and asserts himself as the prince of Dwarka, and he marries 16,100 wives. And nowadays, even to maintain one wife nicely is very hard. Or to maintain two or three wives would be you know, inconceivable. In Kali Yuga, it says that the men are so weak and poor that they don't stay in marriages. The marriages break up and the men go away. And you know, people are very dejected and morose and disillusioned and stuff. And we see that happening. There's high divorce rates. And people are breaking up. They can't establish strong, healthy relationships. And so, anyway, to imagine having 20 or 30 wives, like, you know, or something like that, would be very hard. But to have 16,000 wives, that's inconceivable, right, to us as human beings. How could he even, you know, how could he even meet them all, right? If there's 16,000, you know, if they're 1,000 and you spent one day with each of them, it would take 3 years to... But Krishna shows how it's possible that he's entering Dwarka, and everybody comes out to greet him, and he's greeting everyone and exchanging reciprocation. And then he goes into the palaces, and he's in all the palaces at once. So that's what Narada Muni observed. When Narada Muni came to Dwarka to see how Krishna was getting on in Dwarka, and he'd heard he had all these wives, and he came to see what was going on. So first he came into Rukmini's palace, and there were all these beautiful maidservants. Even the servants were so beautiful, like, you know, better than demigods. And they were very beautifully dressed. The ladies, maidservants, were dressed in silk and had jeweled ornaments and were very highly decorated. There were also men servants who had turbans and silk turbans and also jewelry and very nice dress. And they were there doing, even though they were so noble and aristocratic, they were doing all the menial service. But in spite of that, Rukmini herself was fanning Krishna. She wouldn't let that service go to anyone else. And she was there carrying the chamara and fanning him. And the bedsteads had white sheets on them, white bedding that was as white as the foam of milk. And when Narada Muni came in, then Krishna, because he shows how he respects the brahmanas, Brahmanya Devaya, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. So he got down from his what he was doing from his bed, and he offered respects to Narada and offered prayers and washed his feet and took the water on his head. And Narada knew the Lord's desire, so even though he was the devotee of the Lord, he allowed the Lord to worship him that way. And Krishna said, "What can I do for you?" And then Narada offered these prayers to him. And so then Narada decided to go see what was going on in another palace. So then he entered this another palace, and Krishna was there, and he was playing chess. One of his other wives was there, and he was playing chess with Uddhava, and they were talking about matters of state. And then Krishna pretended that he didn't just get through seeing Narada in the other palace. So he did the same thing. He came down and said, "Oh, you're the people of the renounced order. You are the spiritual masters of everybody." And he offered prayers again. And Narada Muni just allowed this to go on. And then he walked out because he knew Krishna's mind. And he actually went to all the palaces, 16,108 palaces. And in each palace, Krishna was doing, in some palaces, because they had big palace compounds, some of them Krishna was riding on horses and elephants and fighting with swords and or just taking care of his children on his lap and things. Or sometimes he was doing sacrifices, like there's a sacrifice that all householders are supposed to do, pancha, yajna, because there are five kinds of sinful activities that we kill the little insects and germs. We kill them when we drink water. We kill them when we sweep. We kill them when we walk. We kill them when we cook with fire. And so that, I don't know if I got all five of them, but there are different ways that these germs are being killed. So we have to atone for that sinful activity, part of Vedic cultures, by performing some sacrifice. So Krishna was performing this sacrifice in one of the palaces. And each time he came and he pretended that, and he went, Narada went to all 16,000 of them, just to show, you know, what he was doing and everything. And in each palace, Krishna was independently doting on his own family there. And each wife was being taken care of very nicely and very opulently with everything she wanted and all the opportunity for serving Krishna to her heart's content and all the paraphernalia necessary, like they said, big gardens with all fruits and flowers and no want of anything. And each time Krishna pretended that he hadn't seen Narada before. And he got down and offered prayers, and Narada offered prayers to him. And then Krishna said, "Yes, this is correct. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead." He confirmed. So then in his daily activities, he would get up in the morning, and as soon as the cock would crow, he would get up out of his bed, and Rukmini would curse the, you know, "Why does the rooster crow in the morning and I can't stay in bed with Krishna?" And he would get up and he would take his bath and he would give away cows to the Brahmins in charity, and he would meditate on himself because he's the object of meditation. And then, you know, when his daily activity was morning, when his morning program was done and he was ready to go and do this his work for the day and go as a Haribol, as a you know, Kshatriya ruler, he would go to the Sudharma assembly house that was there, that had this, the Sudharma assembly house in Dwarka had this quality that there's no, anyone inside the house doesn't suffer the effects of old age, disease, and death. It's like being in the Vaikuntha inside that place. But he would come out in the morning from all his palaces, and then, you know, as his chariot would come and pick him up, he would merge onto the same chariot so that he was coming from all the different directions of the city and everything. And then by the time they got to the assembly house, they would all just merge together. And then he would walk out, but, you know, as one Krishna form into the assembly house to conduct the affairs of state. So this is the way the Absolute Truth actually exists as a person, and he displays this when he actually comes to Earth and displays all these wonderful pastimes. So he shows us something on Earth of exactly what he brings from the spiritual world. This is going on in Dwarka in the spiritual world. Haribol. There's Dwarka and Mathura and Vrindavan. And these are part of Krishna's own abode. And then there's these unlimited Vaikuntha planets where his different Vishnu Tattva expansions, Narayan expansions preside. And this is going on in the spiritual world. But 5,000 years ago, he displayed that on earth, carrying out his pastimes. And then they were recorded beautifully in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva so that we could learn them, think about them, remember them. And as I was saying earlier, all of these pastimes are not different from Krishna himself. So when we think about the pastimes, when we hear the pastimes, we like to hear stories, right? What do people do in their spare time? They go see the movies or something like that, watch television, or go to a play. We like to, or read novels, we like to hear about different characters and they do different things. But that propensity also can be used in spiritual life by turning our attention to the wonderful dramas that are enacted within the scriptures, in the Puranas, in the Mahabharata, Ramayana, in the Bhagavad Gita, which is part of Mahabharata. I was reading one book by Satsvarup Das Goswami. I was staying for a while when Jagarini and I just moved, so we're closer to the temple. So I'm coming to the morning program now. It's nice to go to Mangalartik and everything. But we were staying with Hansapriya at her house, and she had a book there by Satsvarup Das Goswami where he was, he's an essayist. He likes to explore, his life. He's, thinking about himself and taking inventory of the contents of his own, his own mind and his own history and stuff. And this book was called My Journey Through Books. And he was talking about the different books that he had read before he became a devotee. And, he was kind of an intellectual. He was known among his friends as this bookish guy. But he went into the Navy and he had a lot of time on the ship to read also. And he was reading different philosophers and things. And he had one course. He took one course on Hamlet by some celebrated professor who was a big Shakespearean guy and who had written a book about Hamlet. In fact, Satsvarup Maharaj said, this professor, his book about Hamlet was sort of, he said it was like a perverted reflection of Bhagavad Gita as it is. It was like Hamlet as it is. So many different scholars are there and they're interpreting Hamlet this way and that way. And he says, you don't have to interpret, you can see right in the very verses, in the very dialogue of the play, you can see exactly what's going on and what's being described. And it is, a play about action, just like the Bhagavad Gita is about action and jnana, karma yoga and jnana yoga. That's there in Hamlet too. He can't act because he can't be sure, and he's not sure whether he's supposed to kill his uncle or whether his uncle really killed his father, or whether he may be an illusion and he has to get over illusion. So he was talking about his example, his class, his experience with that class. And Satsvarup Maharaj was reflecting, having become a devotee, having become a follower, a disciple of Prabhupada, a student of Prabhupada's books. He said, yeah, Hamlet has this lot of, good poetry and English phrases, and it has this interesting story. But where is the Krishna who appears and explains how to become enlightened, the way Arjuna's confused. And Hamlet also has a to be or not to be. He also has a dilemma. He's confused, why are we alive? What's going on in life? And why can someone show one emotion while really having another emotion inside? And, has their duplicity? How can you be sure what someone's really thinking? All these things questions are raised there in Hamlet. But there's no answer. There's no description. What's the goal of life? No Bhagavad Gita, no explanation of God, that becomes as fully illumined. So how much better, Satsvarup Maharaj was thinking, how much better a piece of literature is Bhagavad Gita than Hamlet, or is Mahabharata, this setting beautiful jewel in which Bhagavad Gita is set. than Hamlet, which is, you know, Shakespeare's always thought of as the best of the English authors, the greatest of English authors and poets, and Hamlet is one of his great plays or tragedies, although some people really don't like it, you know, some of the commentators, some of the critics say it's jumbled and it's confused and things like that. So they prefer King Lear or Othello or some Romeo and Juliet or something. But anyway, this Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives us in one place that the whole Narada Muni tells Vyasadeva, why is Vyasadeva feeling despondent when he's finished compiling all the Vedic literatures? And Narada Muni says it's because you haven't really described pure devotional service adequately. And he says you've misled people into fruitive religion, thinking that Hare Krishna, thinking that by being good and performing the right pious activities and avoiding sinful activities, then you can have a nice happy life in material life and God will become your order supplier and make your life happy. You're not describing real love. That's not the way of love. That's the way of business. You know, that the real love is when the devotees just want nothing other than Krishna's happiness. So they're not thinking this is what we have to do so that God will favor us with wealth and auspicious things that we need in our temporary life. But really it's on the platform of what are we really, because we're parts and parcels of God and our real nature is, our eternal nature is to love God. Haribo! And so Narada Muni says, you're familiar with all these things, you're perfect, and you can see the absolute truth perfectly, and now you should describe the pastimes of Krishna. Then that would be for the benefit of the whole world. So here the pastimes are being described, and we're getting to talk about how Krishna entered his palaces and all his wives, who were goddesses of fortune, numbering over 16,000, were there in each palace worshipping him. And to their heart's content, everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as sarvakamam, or full with all desirable equipment. That's the spiritual world. Chintamani prakrasadmashu kalpariksha. Everything is full. There's no impediment to serving Krishna and all his unlimited desires to the fullest extent. It's not like in this material world when people are trying to set themselves up as false enjoyers, then they can't enjoy unlimitedly because the whole platform of enjoyment is this false ego. It's the misconception of who they really are. And who they really are is loving servants of Krishna, eternal loving servants of Krishna. So then Bhaktisiddhanta was saying, we heard earlier, that in the spiritual world, there's variety, but it's centered. What was the phrase he used? It was centralized. Page 56. The variety in the transcendental world is fully centralized, whereas in the mundane world it is not so, and hence productive of weal and woe. So we don't have that duality of weal and woe in Dwarka. It's fully centralized. Hare Krishna. Krishna is the center of everything. And it's just splendid and magnificent and fully illuminated and full of bliss and knowledge without any bad qualities, without any influence of the modes of nature, without any influence of temporary limits of space and time. Where there is transcendental time, there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. So in the spiritual world, nobody dies, nobody gets old. When Krishna brings his spiritual world to this plane so that people can see on earth and then can be described as part of the history of earth, then he wraps it up and he makes it, Moksha Lila, he makes it an appearance of people dying and going back to the spiritual world and things like that. But that's not, you know, just like the sun doesn't disappear after the sunset, it's still always eternally there. So Krishna and all his eternal associates in his eternal realm exist constantly. They're never created or destroyed. But by Yoga Maya, he makes an appearance of how they show up and how they disappear. And if we understand all these things fully, then we go back to Godhead when we die. We don't ever take birth again. One who understands the transcendental nature of the Lord's appearance and his activities. And the same is there also for his pure devotees. If we understand how they're transcendental, then Tyaktva Dehang Punarjanma Naiti Mamiti Sorjana. Yes, sir.
In the material world, there's a different section, like there's Vrindavan, there's Mathura, and then there's Dwarka. They're separate towns, cities, if you like. What about the spiritual world there? Are they separate, you know, sections?
Yes, they're separate. And they're separated because there's different moods. There's different moods that predominate there. So devotees who want to worship Krishna in a certain mood, they naturally congregate together in the certain places like Dwarka and Mathura and Vrindavan, and they won't leave that places. You could think, why are the gopis suffering in separation? Krishna went to Mathura, why don't they just go with him and they go to Mathura too and Dwarka and things like that? But actually, they're really with Krishna in their separation. They're actually really with Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan. And so we say, Bhaja Vrindavan, Anande Bolo Hari, Bhaja Vrindavan. They don't want to leave Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya revealed that in the Rathyatra pastime, that it was in the mood of Krishna meeting the gopis in Kurukshetra when there was a solar eclipse. And there's a chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a couple chapters there in the Kurukshetra. There's a chapter where Krishna meets the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He talks to Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and the gopis and different inhabitants of Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya reveals that this is the Rathyatra pastime, that they see Krishna there in Kurukshetra, but they don't like seeing him as a prince. They're not happy to stay with him where he's a prince. Of course, they don't want to be separated from him, but they want to bring him back to Vrindavan. Oh, you're going to India. Hare Krishna. Please accept my obeisances. Oh, it must be very hard to tear yourself away from your little grandson. Well, have a good trip. Have a good flight. It was great to have your association here while you were here. Please come back soon. Yeah. Did you go out for the festival of three? Oh, good. We need everyone we can count. We can still count when you're distributing in India. We'll count it too. Haribol. So yes, there are different. We were talking earlier. There are different divisions in the spiritual world as well, and this painting you see on the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. This painting is a little bit differently executed, but it's the same painting that was designed by Srila Prabhupada for the original Bhagavatam that he brought with him that from India when he came here. He translated the first canto and commentary, and he had this painting that shows Goloka Vrindavan in one part of the spiritual sky, and then other Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. Then they have names like Sri Adhokshaja, Sri Narayana, Sri Trivikram, Sri Hari, Sri Aniruddha, Sri Damodar. So there's these different. All of this is described when Lord Chaitanya was instructing Sanatana Goswami. He described the whole layout of the spiritual world. So yes, there's a Dwarka there, and there's a Mathura there. There's an Ayodhya there where Lord Rama is being served, and there are abodes of Lord Nrisimha, Lord Vamana, Lord Matsya, And they all have their devotees there who like to worship them in these particular moods. And so Krishna appears in all these different... He's so full. That's what we were talking before about monotheism. That he's so full that he appears in all these different ways. In fact, throughout his creation, although Prabhupada said it this way, that Krishna is everything, but not everything is Krishna. In other words, one who is in love, they'll see their beloved in any paraphernalia of their beloved. A mother will see in the when she sees the little shoes or the little toys of her child, it makes her heart warm. She's thinking of her child when she sees his paraphernalia. So Krishna is particularly perceived through his representatives also by the great devotees. There's a, in the story of Sudama, there's a passage where King Parikshit is talking to Shukadeva Goswami about how the perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and the perfection of the head is to bow down before the Lord and his representative. And then Srila Prabhupada says, you know, the third class devotee, the beginning devotee, he sees the deity in the temple and the spiritual master as the Lord's representative, and he can perfect himself by bowing down. The second class devotee is a little more advanced. He can perceive the devotional service in others, and he sees all devotees as representatives of Krishna. So in bowing down to them, he's also able to see Krishna. And the first class devotee, not everybody, Prabhupada said, not everybody can do that because this is for the first class devotee. But he sees Krishna everywhere. He sees the Krishnas in the heart of every living being and in every atom even. And everywhere throughout the creation, he sees the hand of Krishna and he can see Krishna directly all the time, everywhere, in everything. And so this is the this is also the Chintyabheda Bheda Tattva philosophy that we were talking about of Lord Chaitanya, that you know, because it's an expansion of his energies, then it's non-different from Krishna. But at the same time, if you want to take the energy without Krishna, then you're not seeing Krishna. If you don't have that love, if you don't have the that vision, then you know the Mayavadis say, "Oh, everything is Krishna, so why should I pay attention to Krishna?" You know, that's not. In fact, that's envy. That's the last snare of Maya. That's because everything is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna's form is just a representation. The real Krishna is some formless, idea because that's transcendental and not limited. And the form has to be limited and material. That's their wrong philosophy. So they're basically saying, and I meet them when I'm on book distribution. They say, "Why should I?" Some people say, "Why should I be interested in Krishna? If you really understand the Bhagavad Gita, you know the real Krishna is everything, and everything is Krishna. That tree is Krishna. So I don't want to. I don't need books. I don't need the Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to just, you know, bask in the sun, enjoy my cigarette and my glass of wine, and understand that it's all Krishna." But actually, they're not. They're not going to really, you know, they're not going to really remember everything as Krishna. They're, in fact, they're offending Krishna's own words. They don't want to see Krishna in their glass of wine, or they would want to see Krishna in his words too, right? His words are not different.
They are from this other track, their worship through Chinmayanan mission. Uh-huh. But they are also this Mayavadi philosophy, from what I understand. What they say when you give them a Krishna book is, "I'm into the Advaita philosophy." Okay? And so their response is, "I don't need this." Mm-hmm. And what I never understood is, that if it was their Advaita philosophy, isn't Krishna there in that philosophy?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you excluding Krishna? You may say you are Advaita, fine, you have a different path. But it's like, oh, this is something else. I am in Advaita. Mm-hmm. So I never understand where they are coming from, really. Mm-hmm. This is the problem with their presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they think that... the real Krishna is impersonal, and the personal Krishna is just for beginners. But even if it's just for beginners, it's just the easy path. Why don't they accept that even? Why not take the, you know, I mean, I meet all kinds of people who say, oh, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I don't need this book. And I say, yeah, that's fine. You don't need it. You know, we're not trying to change you. But isn't it interesting, you know, we can all talk, you know, I read the Quran, I read the Bible, I'm becoming familiar with that. Why can't you become familiar with this too? And yeah, if you're an Advaitin and you think that you should really only meditate on the Brahman, still, this is, you know, Vyasadev wrote this book. Who's greater than him? You know, why not read it? Yes, go ahead.
Prabhuji was saying that, what is Advaita? It is the same thing what we're saying, right? Or they don't believe that it is a person, or Advaita means it's not two, it is one, right? Advaita. Right.
Well, the absolute truth is actually Advaitam. What's the verse? Vedanti tat tatvavidas tatvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. So the absolute truth is non-dual, advayam, advaitam. But, right, advaitam achintyam, advaitam achyutam, achintya gunaswarupam. The absolute truth is experienced in different phases by different classes of transcendentalists. And one class of transcendentalists is interested in the impersonal feature of the absolute truth. And Krishna says that they can. Arjuna asks in the beginning of the 12th chapter, well, which is better? You know, because Krishna has just shown him universal form. It terrified him. And then he wanted to see Krishna again in his human-like form. And Krishna appeared in four arms, then in this beautiful two-armed form. And Arjuna said, now my mind is peaceful again, seeing you in your original form. And Krishna said, it's only by bhakti that you can see me this way. And even the demigods don't get to see me. You know, this is a very rare form that you can only see by pure bhakti, unalloyed devotion. So then in the 12th chapter, Arjuna says, well, then which is better? Those who approach you by devotional service and bhakti, or those who approach your unmanifested feature? And Krishna says, of the two, the devotee is definitely better. he really says, but he says those who approach the unmanifested, that which is, you know, avyaktam, what is it?
Murti, avyaktam, murti, is
that? Mm-hmm. Well, the verse goes, saniyamendriya gramam sarvatra samabhutaya. Let me see. 12:3. Where am I here? Page, oh, they don't have it, of course. Page 124, they skip it. But it's, Ye tvaksharam anirdesham avyaktang paryupasate sarvatragam achintyang cha kutastam achalang dhruvam. So he's describing that it's fixed, it's immovable, it's, excuse me. I might sneeze. achintya, inconceivable. And then he says, by controlling all the senses, saniyam endriya gramang sarvatra samabhudhaya, you know, by being equally disposed, in equal intelligence, equipoise to all living entities, sarvabhuta hite rataha, being engaged in the welfare of all living entities, ye prapyavanti mami, they attain me. Ultimately, they will attain me. But then he says, in verse 5, klesho dikataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hikatir dukham dehavadbhir avapyate. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. That reminds me of the verses in the 5th chapter where Arjuna is asking which is better, you know, active yoga or renunciation. And Krishna says they're both important, and in fact they're both part of the same thing. It's only those who are, you know, less mature that say that renunciation and yoga are two different things, but actually one who achieves perfection in one path achieves the results of both. But then he says that renunciation without yoga is painful. It's difficult. But one who has yoga, then he very, you know, easily, very happily achieves liberation. Because when we become attached to Krishna consciousness, it's very easy to become detached from other things. The verse, Vaishasika is always quoting that verse, Bhakti Pareshanu Bhavo Viraktira Nyatra Chaisha Trika Eka Kalaha, that these three things come automatically. Prapadyamanasya Yatasya Yatashnutasyuk Pushti Tushti Kshud Apayo Tushti Pushti Kshud Apayo Nukhasam. So for one who is engaged in devotional service, Prapadyamanasya, then they get three things immediately, automatically, that come, that bhakti pareshanu bhava anatyar chaisha viraktir anyatra. So they get transcendental bliss, and they get illumination, some realized knowledge, and they get detachment from other things. They become uninterested in sense gratification. So this is compared to three things that you get when you eat. Prabhupada is often saying, you don't have to tell a hungry man that he's being satisfied by eating. So when you eat, you get pleasure. You're tasting nice food, you get pleasure. You get nourishment, which is compared to getting realization, enlightenment. And you get freedom from hunger, which is compared to, freedom from attachment to material things. So these things are compared. This is in the 11th canto. One of the Yogendras is instructing Maharaj Nimi like that. So Prabhupada is also often saying that. I was listening to one lecture by Prabhupada the other day, and the question was not recorded. You couldn't hear the question, but someone had asked, why is it hard? Why, when you do devotional service, it's troublesome. And Srila Prabhupada answered, if you're not happy, you're not really doing devotional service. He said, devotional service, you must be happy. When you do devotional service, it makes you blissful. So until you do it right, you may not be happy. But if you're doing real devotional service, then you're full of bliss and you're very happy. And otherwise, you haven't really come yet to the platform. So the impersonal path, I'm sorry, getting back to your question, There is a philosophy that's propounded. Basically, in order to get people distracted away from materialistic life, the Vedas are vast and they have something for everyone. So for those who want to enjoy life, they say, all right, you want to enjoy life? You have to do it righteously. Otherwise, you will get a bad result later. So there's a way to live righteously and perform sacrifice and control your senses and work within society according to Varnashram Dharma. You walk the path of Dharma, but you can enjoy life that way. But then others say, yeah, but what is this enjoyment anyway? It's still temporary. I'm still being born and dying. Even if I go to Brahmaloka or whatever, I'm going to die. So then they have the path of Tyag. Let me renounce things. And the scriptures, through philosophical discussion, analyze what is this world, why is it temporary, what is real, and so forth. And they try to explain reality in terms of a negation of the, we were talking about that before, in terms of a negation of the material qualities that, nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. It's in this beginning of the second chapter, verses 11 through 38 or so, Krishna explains Sankhya philosophy. In 39 he says, esha te vihitak Sankhya, Buddhir Yoga Twinang Shinu. First he said, now I've given you Sankhya, now I'm going to tell you Buddhi Yoga. So in that he's saying, well, what, we're not the body. Why are you grieving over the loss of your grandfather, your teacher, and so forth? You're speaking like someone who doesn't know the spiritual platform, that there's an eternal soul in the body, and we have to distinguish between what's matter and spirit. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. That which is real is eternal, and that which is not real, it doesn't last. It's not substance. So that's the impersonal explanation of the absolute truth. It's there in Vedic scriptures. It's there in philosophy. And actually, empiric philosophers, by thinking and analyzing and examining the world, they can come to this platform of impersonal realization. To actually come to the platform of devotional service, you have to have contact with some devotee, right? You can't do it on your own. You have to get the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee, and then he can explain to you about Krishna consciousness and the pastimes and qualities and names of Krishna, and then you can join into that party of the devotees that, you know. But so they have various philosophers that expound those principles of the impersonal feature, and some of them argue against the personal feature, not realizing that it's the same absolute truth. It's the same non-dual absolute truth, as Rakshit was saying, is there, is Krishna is there.
That the personal form of Bhagavan is for the beginners, and people who are advanced, you know, they don't want it, or they are beyond that thing. It's just my logic saying that, you know, the circus people who study circus,
circus people,
they you know, jump in the cycle, the circle, and they do that by practice. And there's a point they say, "Hey, I don't need a circle; I can jump." That is the way I see this.
That's what the Mayavadis say, but they're wrong. Actually, what we say is, if it's the easy path, then why don't you do it? You know, even if you don't need it, like Rick Rakshit was saying. So you say you don't need it, but why not take it anyway? All right, but actually they can't do it. It's too hard to do it right is actually not so easy. And those who are actually the greatest Paramahansas, Shukadeva Goswami, you know, all these great personalities we hear about in Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, they're actually devotees. And they're not bereft of the qualities of renunciation and gyan and all the high class qualities. Yeah, it is easier to become a pure devotee. It's easier to take up devotional service, although pure devotional service is rarely given by Krishna, because those who have pure devotional service can control even him. So you have to be completely pure. You have to be completely free from jnana, karma, tendencies to any envy of him, any desire to take his position in order to get devotional service. But actually, it's not very easy to become a really good Mayavadi or Buddhist monk. You know, to actually, they have to be very austere. Most of these people, they're saying, "Oh, I don't like this path. I follow the Advaita path." But when you examine their personal life, they're not very strict, and they're not even following the rules and regulations of that path.
It would seem that at the practical level, to pursue the path of impersonalism would be difficult, because you have to ask, how am I going to conceive the unmanifested? If there is a personal feature in front of you, then you are able to see it, you know, the various features, the form, it is smiling back to you. It comes in a human form, the Acharya, Archa Vigraha deity. In fact, the Lord says that for the devotees who are aspiring for me, I appear in that form so they can relate. So it would seem that it's easier to relate to a person-to-person interaction, there's an exchange, than to relate to something unmanifested. In fact, Krishna is trying to say in those verses that you went through that it is very difficult to conceive in the unmanifested form. That is why realization of me through that form is difficult. Not impossible, but it's difficult.
But at last, to achieve the result, to achieve the actual perfection in that path also, one has to come to the platform of becoming a devotee, actually. The Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth is incomplete. It's just the glowing radiance of Krishna's effulgence. And the Paramatma feature, his localized aspect, is also incomplete. That's a feature that he accepts when he comes into the material world, as one of the Purusha avatars in the material world, along with the bewildered living entities. But his real full manifestation of his full qualities are there in the spiritual world. And the feature of bliss, the Ladini Shakti, is not does not really. They talk about Brahmananda, the bliss of becoming one with Krishna, becoming one with the impersonal Brahman in that kind of meditation. But that bliss, but those who know, the connoisciente, the connoisseurs of Krishna consciousness, they find that the bliss in the Brahmananda is like a thimbleful. It's like nothing compared to the ocean of the bliss that's there in these very juicy, wonderful pastimes of Krishna. And as we recite in the morning, Atma Ramas Chimunayo Nirgranta Yap Yurukrame, that even those who are actually liberated, they still relish hearing the pastimes of Krishna, because Krishna does have transcendental qualities. His qualities are not material.
But the ultimate truth is Krishna is person. It's not impersonal.
He has his impersonal feature, but he's ultimately not personal. He's inconceivable, but when you relate to his personal feature, then you are your spiritual progress is complete. And if you don't relate, if you don't accept the dust of his lotus feet, then you will fall down again. Lord Brahma says that in the 10th canto. Srila Prabhupada was often fond of quoting that verse too. Aruya krichtrena parang padang tata padantyato anadrita yusmadangraya. That those who, avishuddha buddhaya, those who have impurified intelligence, they may think that themselves liberated, but until their intelligence is completely purified, then they will fall down again. Because by nature, the soul really is active. The soul is not really a vibrating particle of, those who take to the path of impersonalism, they find it difficult later to take to the path of personalism, because they're too attached to this idea of, it's really a philosophy based on disappointment, Prabhupada says in the purport to Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, Man Maya Mamupashrita Bhavo Gyanatapasa Puta Madbhava Magataha. He says that what is this Raga Bhaya Krodha? So raga is material attachment. Bhaya is fear. So those who've experienced with material attachment, they've experienced misery. When you try to engage in material enjoyment, those are the sources of misery. Ehi sang sparsha jabhoga dukkayanaya evate. So they become fearful of anything material. They become fearful of any personality. They actually still have the deep-seated, they're still cultivating the deep-seated envy of Krishna in their heart that will not let them give their hearts in love to any other person. So they think, I can become impersonal. I can merge with the impersonal. It's actually a demoniac quality. Although there are great sages, there's Mahar Loka, there are planets of sages and there are personified Vedas there that expound the impersonal conception. But, the example is the four Kumaras, when they actually came to the gates of Vaikuntha and they smelled the fragrance of tulsi and sandal on the lotus feet of the Lord, then they became devoted through that smelling, when it entered their nostrils. This shows, any sense, you can hear about Krishna's pastimes, you can see the form of Krishna, or you can even smell the prasadam, the incense that's offered to the deities, or the tulsi on his lotus feet, and then they became devotees. So the four Kumaras were great impersonalist sages, but they're the head of one Vaishnava Sampradaya, right? There's different four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, the Kumaras, Lakshmi, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. So the four Kumaras also are Vaishnavas. They became Vaishnavas. So, but yes, that resistance to becoming a devotee of Krishna is a demoniac quality. When you read the 16th chapter, where the Sura and Asuras are described, those who are by nature atheistic are described as Asura, that they think the world is unreal. That is the philosophy. The followers, the Mayavadi followers of Shankaracharya, they propound a philosophy that's aimed at overthrowing the conception of personal conception of Krishna. The actual natural understanding of Vedanta Sutra, the natural explanation of the texts of the Vedic literatures of the Upanishads and the Brahma Sutras, is devotional, although it doesn't use a lot of devotional language. It doesn't describe a lot of pastimes, but it explains the philosophy of how Krishna is a person. He's full, he has everything, and he has energies, various energies, like the Upanishads talk about, Parasya Shakti or Vividhaiva Shruyate, that he's engaging through the world through his various energies, which are non-different from him, but yet which can be transform. So the philosophy of the Vedas is really Vaishnava philosophy. The Mayavadi philosophy, they have to use language, they have to use tricky lawyers' arguments to twist the impersonal philosophy out of it because of their continued enviousness of Krishna, that not willingness to accept Krishna's lotus feet. So Prabhupada says, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So Bhaya, fear, he compares to impersonalism, and Krodha, anger, he compares to voidism, the idea that ultimately there's nothing, and any experience, any consciousness at all is just based on desire, and ultimately we can be extinguished. So we find some of the Buddhist scholars have a philosophy of ultimate voidism. Although in practice, they practice just like the Hindu Mayavadis. I saw Dalai Lama was at the Kumbh Mela, and he was giving a speech, and he was saying, you say there's a soul, I say there's no soul, but these are just doctrines, but really we're really all doing the same thing, he was saying. And it's true, the Mayavadis are just Buddhists in another. They've reinterpreted Vedic scriptures so that they can, continue the atheistic attitude of Buddhists. Yes, sir.
To the effect that Vrindavan and Mathura in this material world is the same as in the spiritual world. They're non-different. They are the same things. Can you kind of comment on that? And then when we go to the spiritual world, would we see the same Vrindavan or Mathura there in the spiritual world?
The same, like when we hear about when Krishna brings Vrindavan to earth, and he has this relationship with the different gopis and gopas and cows and the flute and things like that. All those same things we'll see there in the spiritual world. If we go to Vrindavan, if we buy a ticket and we go there, we may or we may not be able to see that pure Vrindavan because we're still looking through our material eyes. Rupa Goswami says that one who has the jaundice of ignorance, he can't see anything sweet. He can't taste anything sweet. When one has jaundice, everything smells bad. When your liver is affected like that, your sense of taste is bad, your senses are bad. So now we're experiencing the world through the material senses we have in our material body. And so even if we go to Vrindavan, we may have a sense that there's something very special and holy about this place, something very mystical here. But Prabhupada said, you won't find Krishna loitering in Loy Bazaar, among the shops, everybody doing business and everything. But Krishna is perceived in the mood of the six Goswamis who are saying, where is Krishna? Is he just over there? Is he on the hill of Govardhan? Is he on the Vankshivata? So, yes, the holy Dhammas, and especially in this Kali Yuga, the holy Dhamma abode of Lord Chaitanya becomes prominent. Because in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya is spreading the Sankirtan movement, and and he's more merciful. If you commit offenses, like when we chant the holy name, if we commit offenses to the holy name, we're not going to really perceive the nectar of the holy name. And I went to the Japa retreat, and the devotees of ISKCON Silicon Valley were kind enough to buy as a birthday present for me so that I could go to the Japa retreat. And we went there and got the association of Giriraj Maharaj. And he was recounting that someone had asked Srila Prabhupada, what is it really like when you really chant Hare Krishna correctly? And Prabhupada was at first a little like he was putting off the question and answering other things and stuff, but someone was persistent. I think Brahmananda was persisting and saying, no, Prabhupada, this is the question, you know, like what is it really like to chant when we're chanting correctly, you know, because they were thinking like, what are you going to see? What kind of mystical experience are you going to have? And Prabhupada was saying, no, you hear the holy name and that's the actual holy name and you really hear it, you know. So they were persisting, but what will it be like? What, you know, and Prabhupada said, it will be like, you'll think, why only 16? Why not 1,000 rounds? Why not chant 1,000 rounds? You'll be relishing it so much that you never want to stop. Right? Now we're chanting our rounds and our mind is saying, oh, can't you do something else? I'm tired of listening to this, paying attention to this mantra. Wait, let me think about what I'm going to do later in the day. Or let me think about these other things. And, you know, this chanting is hindering my control over you, that I get to drag you here and there, you know, put down those beads and let's go eat something. Let's go, you're feeling a little sleepy, let's go take a nap. Come on, you know, the mind is rebelling and you're controlling it. But when we really become expert and the mind finally surrenders and says, okay, I will worship Krishna, I will engage myself in the lotus feet of Krishna, like King Kulashekara, what is the, you know, the verse? There's a verse that Prabhupada used to quote a lot. This South Indian great poet, and he was saying that, you know,
I know the translation. It's like looking at a young woman.
No, that's probably Yamunacharya. This verse is saying like, you know, let me die now, actually. While this, you know, manasa raja hangsa prana prayana samaye kapavata pite kantaviro dhanavidho sparane kutastvam krishna tvadiya padapankacha panjarantam adyaiva vishatu me manasa raja hangsa. So he's saying now that because my mind is like a swan and it's getting stuck in the stems of your lotus feet. Like if the swan goes underwater and gets his neck all tangled up in the lotuses, then he can't come out and he may drown like that. So he's saying, now that my mind is entangled, now that this king swan of my mind is entangled in the stem of your lotus feet, I'm ready. Now let me die. Because later, if my voice becomes choked up with phlegm and I might not be able to pronounce your holy name. So let me die now. But anyway, you know, when our mind finally becomes like that, wrapped up in the stem of Krishna's lotus feet, and it doesn't have any other interest, it doesn't have anything else to do, then we think, why 16? Why not 1,000? Why not a million rounds? Why should I stop now? You know. But anyway, getting back to your question, I'm sorry about the. Yes, so Vrindavan is there, Mathura is there. When you go there, this is a place where Krishna actually appeared. And when he appeared, he took his associates with him. And he took his pastimes that are the eternal pastimes that go on in the unmanifested realm beyond time and space. And he made them visible to the people of this world. But even though they were visible, not everybody could really understand them, you know. Only a few people could really understand intimately Krishna's mind, you know, different, or Lord Chaitanya. You know, only a few people were really entered into this complete confidences. A lot of people saw, Lord Chaitanya is a saintly person. They felt bliss when chanting and things. But not that many people could really understand everything that he was giving. So when Krishna entered the arena to kill Kamsa, you know, he killed the elephant Kuvalyapida, and he was very beautiful. He was spattered with blood, and he was dragging these tusks. I think he had one, and Balaram had the other, and they were perspiring, and they looked very beautiful. And all the different people there, they saw him differently, and you know, like the ladies saw him as the most beautiful Cupid, and the Yadu dynasty saw him in the four-armed form. You know, different people saw him differently. And the Kamsa saw him as death personified, come to kill him, you know. And so we may go to Vrindavan, Brajabhumi, And we should go to Vrindavan. And the spiritual atmosphere there is very conducive to chanting and to spiritual life. But we're, you know, that Vrindavan that's described by Srinivasacharya, that all the trees there, they have valuable jewels encrusted in their roots and stuff. You know, we won't find that with our material senses. If we start digging up the trees to look for the jewels and try to get rich that way because we heard that, we'll actually just be committing offenses and we won't see those jewels. But if we chant Hare Krishna without offense, then we can see how the whole place is Chintamani Dham. We can actually see that. So it's and this described in the Brahma Samhita by Bhaktisiddhanta, but it's like a superimposed, like a different dimensions intersect at these holy places, so that this is an opportunity. It's like, you know, they have in science fiction movies, sometimes a portal opens to another dimension or to another time or something, and then people can go into that portal, and because of the special place and location, it's, you know, they can go. So when Krishna appears on earth and his lotus feet touch the earth on that place and is impressed with the images of the goad for controlling elephants and the wheel and the different things that are on Krishna's lotus feet, the lotus flower, the thunderbolt. So those places where Krishna has set his feet, they're very special. They will always be very special places, and the devotees worship those places. And you can see that even still, in spite of, you know, sinful activities and modern times and Kali Yuga and stuff like that, but still, Tulsi Devi grows in abundance there, and there are still many devotees who come and chant Hare Krishna there. And we can go there and take shelter of those devotees, take bath in the river. But especially, Prabhupada would emphasize this other verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that said that, you know, one should go on pilgrimage to a holy place to get the association of devotees. It said, Kunape Tridatuke. Okay, someone must know this verse, right? You guys have to help me out. Yasyatma Budhi Kunape Tridatuke. Yasmin. Yeah, that will be in here for sure. Bhoma Ijati Janeshwa Bhigyeshu Saeva Gokara. It's the 11th canto. Well, you'll find it in the index. Yasyatma Bhuti. Oh, it's the 10th canto, sorry. Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke swadhi kalatradashu poma ijadhi yat tirta buddhi salilena karhachich janeshu abhigyeshu sa eva gokara. One who identifies his self as the inert body composed of mucus, bile, and air, who assumes his wife and family are permanently his own, who thinks an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, or who sees a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, but who never identifies himself with, feels kinship with, worships, or even visits those who are wise in spiritual truth, such a person is no better than a cow or an ass. So this is Krishna speaking at the solar eclipse at Kurukshetra. Okay. So the point is, of course, the images of Krishna are worshipable, and the holy rivers are holy, and the holy places of pilgrimage are worshipable. But this, the point that Krishna is stressing here is that when we go to these holy places, the real reason is to get the association of devotees. That you were saying before, you were saying Archa Vigraha, but you said Acharya first, and I was thinking, but that's right also, because there's a worshipable form of Krishna, but those devotees who are actually, you know, acting in pure devotional service, they're also the representatives of Krishna. They're the walking Bhagavatas. There's a book Bhagavata and there's a person Bhagavata. And those devotees who are really practicing spiritual life and they're surcharged with spiritual feelings and they can explain the scriptures directly, like you're saying, you need a person. You need to have a personal relationship. You know, if you try to, you can't love, you know, something unmanifested, some abstract idea, that which is unmanifested, that which is all-pervading. But you can love Krishna. And the devotees of Krishna teach you how you can love Krishna. You can accept the devotees of Krishna as representatives of Krishna and learn that, how to love Krishna from them by following how they love Krishna. You can pick up that mood very easily in their association. So that's our whole process. So it's getting very late. We went really long. I didn't know. So any other comments or questions before we go to Guru Puja? Yes.
So if we follow the 10th canto.
Is it on?
So if we follow the 10th canto, the pastimes. So we would see if we were to go to the spiritual world, we would see those pastimes happening. Is that correct?
Yes, we like, would see if like, we were
like Krishna fighting with Kulapedia, Kuvalapedia, and things like that, and all the pastimes.
The pastimes are there. The moods are there. There aren't any real demons there, because demons aren't allowed there. But Yoga Maya arranges for there to be the moods of Krishna fighting the demons. And maybe some demon will appear there for the purpose out of Yoga Maya. Anyway, these things are a little actually beyond my, beyond my, what is it? Like Obama said, beyond my pay grade, I think he said. But actually, it's said that Krishna comes to the material world when he wants a good fight, you know. He doesn't have any demons to fight in the spiritual world, so he comes to the material world and he sends one of his intimate servants, like Jai and Vijay, will come and they'll act like demons and he can fight with them and kill them. But yeah, all these pastimes, all the rasas are going on. These are explained by Rupa Goswami, that there's five primary rasas: servitorship, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love, and also there's the neutrality of the peaceful Shanta Rasa. And then there are seven minor rasas that mix. So there's chivalry and laughing, ghastliness and dread, and there's different kinds of, you know, surprise and fear. There are different kinds of rasas, and they mix in very palatable ways. In the spiritual world, they're all very... very perfect, and they're relished by devotees without any improper mixing, and so all of those things are there. So especially, the rasa dance and the Mother Yashoda chasing Krishna, trying to chastise him, Krishna stealing butter and stealing from the gopis and things like that are all there in the spiritual world. As for his fighting with demons, it's also represented there somehow, although there aren't actually any real demons there. You can't get there if you're a demon. It's inconceivable to us how Krishna's pastimes are going on. They're going on constantly. They're beyond time. You know, our understanding is, and you can actually see this in Krishna's pastimes, that sometimes even though he's a very small child, he does something that an older boy would do. And he grows up really fast, you know, because he's only in Vrindavan for 11 and a half years or something like that. And yet he's like a 16-year-old boy dancing with gopis, and he can become, and even, you know, and then we saw here in, you know, the last verse we read, you know, here he is after, you know, more than 100 years of his pastimes, and he goes and sits on the laps of his stepmother, and they're all feeling motherly affection, and milk is coming from their breasts, and he's sitting on their laps, even though he's been on earth for over 100 years. So Krishna, it's not the ordinary time sequence of things, as we experience them, we expect them to go. He makes his pastimes sort of fit into those kind of time sequences, but he can adjust it, you know, because it's all really based on the moods. He's killing Kuvalyapida. He's always doing that. He never stops doing that. He's doing that somewhere, someplace, on some planet, in some universe, and his pastimes are always going on. And we always heard that if we become really good devotees and we maybe not just directly go to Krishna Loka, but we'll go to a place in some material universe where Krishna's pastimes are going on. That's sadhana.
That's a striking point for me, is pretty natural, you know. Uh-huh. That's a good concept. There's good things in the universe. Somewhere is taking place.
Yeah.
Srila
Prabhupada called it the traveling road show. You know, they're doing this show over and over again, and somewhere that pastime is always taking place, and we can actually go to a place where that's going on until we refine ourselves enough that we can actually go among the world of completely pure devotees without causing a disturbance, without being like a skunk at a garden party. We can go to some place. Right here, these are Lord Chaitanya's pastimes going on now, where all these devotees are going on book distribution, festival of 300 book distributors. You know, we're actually participating in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes now. He was here on earth only 500 years ago, so he was born 524 years ago, apparently born, his appearance. And then he was here so he took sannyas just 500 years ago. And then another 24 years, he exhibited his pastimes on earth. So it's just in recent history that Lord Chaitanya has appeared. Of course, we think of, you know, we tend to think, oh, 50 years is a long time, and the people of, you know, 100 years ago, things were so much different and stuff. But actually, these are kind of a blink of an eye if we have a longer view of things. And here we are really close to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. It's really Prabhupada's amazing pastimes. You know, we're in my lifetime, and we can take advantage, be part of these pastimes, and while we're doing our service, distributing books, talking to people and stuff, also in our mind, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're thinking about Krishna's pastimes, we're reading Prabhupada's books and remembering what we read, and we're preparing ourselves for a lifetime in Krishna's association. In a future lifetime, and directly in Krishna's association. See, this is the devotional. The yogis spend all this time controlling, subduing the senses, subduing the mind, so that they can meditate clearly. But those who are perfectly meditating clearly can actually enter into the lila, and the bhakti yoga is doing that immediately. Here, take it. So it's at once simple and sublime, and it's sublime for the Paramahansas, and it's simple for those beginners who are just on the threshold of bhakti. And so we shouldn't think that because it's easy that it's inferior, because it's actually, first of all, it's not really that easy to do it really correctly. But second of all, it leads to the highest, result, conclusion, that's not available for people on other paths, even if they may be more difficult. And so we should just do it. And I remember when I first became a devotee, I was thinking I would be chanting in japa, and I was thinking, but this isn't for me. You know, I should really go out and be an ascetic, and you know, climb up in the mountains alone and live naked in the winter. I was thinking like that. I don't know what made me to think like that, but actually, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't survive 2 weeks doing that, and then my mind would tell me, you know, you don't want to do this. You've got something else, something better to do. Go try something else. I was crazy, and I was thinking like that. But actually, we have such a nice community where we can go on with our lives, we can raise our families, we can do it, and we come together, chant Hare Krishna, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, have kirtans, go on book distribution, go on Harinam, and it's all blissful. Kevala Ananda Kanda. So who wouldn't take? And it gives you the highest result that can't be achieved by the jnanis and yogis. So who wouldn't take this Lord Chaitanya's movement? Only someone who is, the acharyas say, only someone who is knowingly taking poison, you know, committing suicide, you know, would not take part in this movement. But our intelligence becomes clouded, and we sometimes forget, or we become impelled to other things. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Krishna Sankirtan ki jai, Hari Hari Bol.